listeners. Welcome back to another episode of The Dish with Tish, where pop culture is served. Oh, honeys, what a time to be alive. We are practically running a courtroom over here, okay? When I tell you I've been on my Olivia Pope, Annalise Keating, Shonda Rhimes grind over here at The Dish. This week, the celebs are trading the red carpets for subpoenas. The Diddy trial is unfolding with disturbing and sickening revelations. And the legal drama doesn't even stop there, y'all. Taylor Swift has been subpoenaed in the Justin Baldoni, Blake Lively case. Kim Kardashian is back in Paris to testify against the men who robbed her. Hollywood is under oath, and we're going to break it all down right here on The Dish with Tish. Oh my gosh, you guys. Also, to my fellow Chicagoans, happy Beyonce week. Oh, my Lanta, which I hope you have on deck, because the digestion is about to get real, and we're just going to rip the Band-Aid off and start with the rough, heavy shit, which is the Diddy trial. This has been a long time coming, and if you were a pop culture girly and your brain works like mine, this has been taking up a lot of space. In the old noggin, and just seeing it go down this week, I have been glued to the courtroom. And the jury was finally selected at the end of last week. And the trial is taking place in a federal court in Manhattan. And the charges are racketeering, sex trafficking, coercion, and unlawful surveillance. And I've actually been thinking about this a lot over the last couple of days, like since the trial began. And, you know, I love my true crime. I love my theories. And I always joke and say I would love to be a juror in these entertainment cases, like the OJ trial. Oh, my gosh. Robert Blake. Bill Spector, like just being in these crazy high profile cases. I joke and say I would love to be a part of them. But this one in particular, honestly, I would never want to be a part of this trial I believe the record shows, if you go back to all the instances in Diddy's life where the legal system has been involved, there's been a lot of manipulation. There have been payoffs. There have been so many documentaries out there that have given cold, hard evidence that he has paid people off and he has threatened people. And I honestly would be scared to be on this jury. And even after the verdict comes in, I would watch my back my entire life if I was on a jury like this, because, I mean, criminals like this on this level, when it's almost like a mafia vibe, they don't forget. They never forget. And it seems like they just are like rewatching Scarface and Godfather on a loop, and they never forget, and they will come back to get your ass. And at a certain point, and it's giving the five families coded. I mean, I love, because that's like weird. I am just very fixated. It's a hyper fixation of mine. Organized crime is something that very much piques my interest. So they said that Diddy is almost gray in the full front of his hair, but they're allowing him to change into outside clothes out of his prison wear. And he was very happy to see his family, and they exchanged like the little heart emojis and things of that nature. Now, opening statements, prosecutor Amanda Klein, I do not have a full transcript of this. If you guys know where I can get a full transcript, let your girl know. I was online today in the judicial system database. What's it called? I think it's called Pacer. And I couldn't get it. And I was willing to pay. I think it's like 10 cents a page because I wanted to get Cassie's full transcript. And I was going to do a full episode just reading the transcripts out loud. So yeah, let me know if you guys know a way to get this because I couldn't find it. So everything I'm going to go over is paraphrased, but it's pretty harrowing stuff. So again, big trigger warning here. So Amanda Klein, the prosecutor, opens with, over two decades, Mr. Combs used his fame, fortune, and his fear to control women. This is not a case about consensual sex. This is about power, manipulation, and trafficking. She talked about the concepts that now we are familiar of that are the freak-offs, which are the drug-fueled encounters that involved escorts, where women were allegedly put into group sexual activity under the surveillance of him, and he would record everything. And let's not forget, we all remember when they did the raid on him and there was like 600 bottles of baby oil. And Cassie, in her testimony, was like, the first time we did a freak off, it was just so much baby oil. Like, talk about a fixation. That dude has one with baby oil. I mean, like, are you ashy? Is it something like that? I don't know. Like, why? Why the baby oil? And in my professional opinion, people who, I'm like, girl, no. People who baby oil and sit in the sun, I'm like, girl, you about to be a California raisin. Not that. So he's got a hyperfixation with the baby oil. And the 2018 surveillance clip from the Intercontinental Hotel, which showed Combs chasing Cassie, his girlfriend at the time, down the hallway, grabbing her by the hair, slamming her against the floor. The courtroom audibly gasped when they played this, which, something that I think we all collectively did when CNN first released that video. Now, the witnesses, on the first day, we had Daniel Phillip, who is the male escort, and he testified that he was hired for several freak-offs and was paid $5,000 in cash. Just the fact that, like, freak-offs is such a common phrase in this, like, if you played the drinking game and drinking every time they said freak-offs, like, no one's going to match his freak. No one. Not even Tinashe. She's like, no. Actually, that's where I draw the line. So Daniel Phillip described Diddy as aggressive, controlling, and often recording everything. And that he would almost wear like a hood type, which is also like, why? Okay. For the culture, why are you doing that with where you can only see his eyes? Or he would wear sunglasses and he'd be sitting and watching the men do things to Cassie and the other women, and he'd be pleasuring himself. And then sometimes he would like to shout out instructions. Very, very dark shit. And Daniel Phillip claimed Cassie rarely spoke unless spoken to and was visibly high during most encounters. So that's the other thing, too, is that they're saying that Diddy pushed ecstasy and other drugs on Cassie and the other women. He said she looked dazed, like she was there, but not really there. And then we had a witness, Israel Flores, who is a security guard who I believe was at the Intercontinental Hotel during the incident and found Cassie bruised and shaken after the hallway assaults, like she had been beaten, and claimed that Diddy offered him a Rolex and $10,000 in cash to not report the incident. And Flores said that Diddy said, and I quote, "You don't want to ruin your career over this. Just let it go." Girl. No. Now the defense is opening. We had attorney Matthew Brack offering the pivot with saying, yes, Sean Combs has lived a wild, sexual, unconventional lifestyle, but that is not illegal. These were consenting adults. The only thing that Mr. Combs is guilty of is not being discreet. And he dismissed the freak-offs and labeled them as salacious branding for consensual adult behavior. Now, this is very deviant behavior, but if they are both agreeing parties, if people are of sound mind, you know, who is it to police those things? Like, girl, what? But that's what the government in the district is trying to prove. That this racketeering, this is an operation of people that were paid off to use drugs and alcohol against their will. I mean, the freak-offs would last at most 4 days. 4 days. Imagine being kept up for 4 days, having to have sex with multiple men that you didn't even know, like escorts. And the Cassie thing, it's just so tragic because he met her at such a young age and they were not initially romantically involved. He was somebody that could make or break a music career, you know, and he took interest in Cassie as a musical artist. So she was, of course, so excited when this opportunity arose and she was signed to a 10-album deal. She only released one album, even though they recorded hundreds of songs, but he would never release them. So imagine having this person who is like a mentor guiding you in this industry. He comes to her birthday party and he kisses her for the first time. And at the time, he was still with his ex, Kim Porter. And we know they were on and off for years, and she has since passed away under very odd circumstances. I think that that is very, very sus. She was like, "I've never had someone do that to me. Like, that was my boss." At the same time, he kind of wined and dined her and showed her romance. And then he was in control of every aspect of her career. And then it eventually turned into every aspect of her life. So on day two of the trial, Cassie took the stand with testimony that took nearly 4 hours. And she said it began, you know, with the glitz and the glamour, the wine and the dine. And that it ended in fear and coercion. And as she described, it was very gruesome and intimate details of their 11-year relationship. And I don't think people realize how long it was. You know, like, they were together for a minute. And, you know, she talked about this before. She said she wasn't allowed to leave the house without his approval, that he tracked her phone, her credit cards, and her body. And in another comment, she said, "He hit me so many times, I lost count. And in one night in 2015, I had to get stitches, and I told people I fell at a freak-off." She said he'd line up the escorts, and she had to be involved, or he'd scream and smash things, and he'd film it, and she never consented to that. Now, they did do a ruling today on whether they're going to allow the freak off videos to be shown in court. They're going to be shown to the jury, but they're wondering if this should be a closed kind of set, you know, where the public loses access, because you can go in and watch. You can get a ticket or put yourself in the lottery to be in the courtroom. So will the public be able to be there the day of the freak off videos are shown? I personally don't think they should. I think the jury should be able to see it, but I think it's already so demoralizing for Cassie for her to have to relive it over and over and then know that this is going to be even more public than it has to be. I just don't think it should be open to the public to see those videos, you know. The other thing is, Diddy has his kids. He has 3 daughters and 2 sons, and they were in the courtroom, united front, and they were there during some of the abuse and sexual stuff being discussed, and some of the daughters actually left the courtroom, and they did come back. And this is all speculative, but of course they love their father. But it's also to show the jury, right? This is a sympathetic man. He's a family man. Look at this beautiful family that he has, you know, him being taken away from them. His daughters are young. It's all about painting a picture. We know courtroom is very theater-esque, theater adjacent. You're putting on a show. You are trying to sway these jurors into, did this person commit these crimes? So Cassie also said she attempted to leave in 2018. He allegedly threatened to ruin her family and bury her career. But in some ways, he kind of already buried her career throughout the course of their relationship with not releasing the albums. I mean, they recorded hundreds of songs and she only dropped 1 album under him and Bad Boy. That's fucking crazy. Now, the cross-examination, the defense attorney does what a defense attorney is supposed to do and tried to discredit her and asked her about her continued relationship with him after these incidents and brought up text messages showing affectionate language. And she said she like trauma bonded. I mean, it was Stockholm syndrome for real. You can't just walk away from someone like that. Like, he's watching everything you do. And I mean, if you think about any of your own relationships or a relationship you have been in that you've known wasn't good for you or healthy, but you stayed anyway. I'm sure if it has to happen to you, it's happened to someone you love, it's happened to someone you know. I think this is very common. This is not something that is hard to understand. And especially when you're not trying to rock the boat and you're just trying to like get through the day to day or not have this person upset at you. And it's easy to judge and say it would never be me, but you truly never know until you're in that situation. And it's very, very intense, all of this. I mean, she talked about Diddy got her a place, a nice high rise on the Wilshire corridor in Los Angeles. And he was just a couple blocks away and he would roll up in a golf cart. But at times he would take her computer. He would take her phone and she would have to go to his house to get them back and ask for permission to get her shit back. And he had his staff take all of her electronics. And she said it depended on if she like obeyed or not. And in fact, if he didn't like a look on her face, he'd hit her. Or if she smirked at the wrong time, he'd hit her. And it just got more and more intense. And the details about the male escorts are truly fucking grotesque. I mean, they are just, I'm not going to get into all of it because it's fucking gnarly and not the cat's eye gnarly, just like real bad. Like one of the escorts, she talked about having someone urinate in her mouth, and one of the escorts, after they finished doing it and he finished his business on her back, I guess Diddy took her into another room and lay down with her, and he made her rub the dude's ejaculant on his nipples, which is like a fucking horrific detail that I'm sure was just so excruciating, having to have everybody know this and it's on public record, and it's most certainly very traumatic on top of trauma already for Cassie. So since this is a racketeering RICO charges, people are hearing the testimony over the last few days. And mind you, this is only the first week that we're in, so people shouldn't rush to judgment. And, you know, people are saying, we see a horrible person here who abused a woman, but we are not necessarily seeing the state's case proving RICO charges and racketeering. But that's coming. Like, you can't just judge by a few days. This trial is going to be weeks, if not months, long. So yes, they're trying to paint a picture of the manipulation and the cruelty of this man and a very brave person in Cassie. And, you know, I've been riding with Cassie since Me and You. Remember dancing to that at a high school dance. And I just am so proud of her for being able to speak to this and almost claiming some of the power that she lost. And I'm sure that like 18, 19 year old girl who was a bright eyed and bushy tailed singer, you know, doing this for her and for her daughters. And there's so much power in testifying against him. And they're going to have other witnesses as well. But I do believe that some of the witnesses have probably already been contacted by Diddy in some way, if not by him, by his lawyers. And Cassie, at this point, she's in her third trimester. She is very pregnant, but she's so happy and healthy and in a relationship with the hottest fucking guy, Alex Fine. Oh, my Lanta. Is he fine? He is so fine. And they have a beautiful family. And I'm just so glad that she has the support from them, her fans. She got $20 million and she can move on with her life. And I hope that this is just like officially closing that chapter for her and she gets some justice out of this. And hopefully we get some new music from her soon. And that's just the first week of this, y'all. I will keep you updated on this trial. I know it is heavy, but this is someone that was truly such a prominent figure in pop culture for the last 20, 30 years. And it is just crazy to see it unfolding finally. And we're going to see what comes of it. So stay tuned for all your Diddy info at the dish. But speaking of legal drama, we're going to get into we're going to go from one courtroom to the other, because Taylor Swift just got subpoenaed in the Justin Baldoni Blake Lively case. So we're going to get into that plot twist. Okay. So Taylor has not been seen publicly with Blake Lively since the end of 2023. And this movie came out in August. And before that, she hadn't been seen with her. So for my Swifties, remember this subpoena was sent to Taylor on April 28th. And guess what else happened on April 28th? Travis Kelce unfollowed Ryan Reynolds. You think that's a coincidence? My Swifties know she has a song about April 29th. And I really wish it would have been on April 29th. But getting back to the movie and the Taylor of it all, not one time did Taylor mention It Ends With Us on her Instagram. Never did she say, hey guys, It Ends With Us is premiering this weekend. Go to the theater and support my best friend Blake Lively in her lead role, where she's also producing a movie. My song is in the movie, in the trailer. She never did that at all. But she heavily promoted Deadpool and Wolverine that came out just 2 weeks before that. So I'm like, what's the reasoning for that? So the Daily Mail has an exclusive article talking about the fallout. So I'm going to read this a little bit, this Daily Mail article. Let's dish on this article together, okay? I'm passing the plate around, honey. I'm passing the dish around. And the Daily Mail, I actually low-key trust for stories like these because, as you know, they do be coming in with the tea. So, okay, let's read this exclusive. Blake Lively threatened to expose Taylor Swift's private text messages unless she publicly sided with her in the Justin Baldoni feud. Like, what the actual dragon fuckery is that? Okay, Blake Lively allegedly threatened to leak embarrassing private texts from bestie Taylor Swift unless the pop star agreed to publicly back the actress in her feud with Justin Baldoni. Can I ask a question real quick? Have you ever had to threaten your best friend for real, for real? Honestly, I've never once in my life had to threaten. Never had to threaten my bestie. Like, hey, if you don't fucking publicly back me, I'm going to leak your shit. I can't with this chick. I cannot. This explosive revelation appears in a legal letter addressed to a judge by Baldoni's lawyers on Wednesday in response to Lively's request to quash the subpoena to the singer. The court filing also alleged that the Gossip Girl had urged Swift to delete the text messages between them during her escalating legal battle with Baldoni. Okay. I cannot. The caucasity of this woman is, it knows no bounds. This is a white woman with pretty, a white woman. That's how irritated I am. She got me tongue-tied as fuck. She got me heated. This white privilege having, pretty privilege having, entitled ass bitch. Not only did she ask her to support her, she also threatened to leak embarrassing text messages and asked her to delete them? Like, girl, it's 2025. Have you heard of the fucking cloud? We can find those messages, honey. Okay? Forensic accounting. They can examine everything. Financial records, fucking text messages. Girl, in a $400 million lawsuit, you think deleting a fucking text message is going to save your ass? No. Anyway, the latest twist sheds further light on the collapse of Lively and Swift's once close friendship, which has gone cold. Made the actress's high stakes lawsuit involving the actor. Since then, both Swift and Lively have been subpoenaed for communications about the case. Despite the superstar's attempt to distance herself from the future, in the letter obtained by The Daily, Baldoni's lawyers hit back at Lively's wrong claims that the proposed subpoena to Swift irrelevant documents. They maintain that the order is aimed at obtaining information related to witnesses tampering in evidence, specifically that Lively had attempted to coerce Swift into publicly siding with her. Baldani's team received information that Lively had contacted Swift's lawyers and demanded that Miss Swift release a statement of support for Lively. It's feeling very much like Ryan Reynolds writing that letter to William Morris, to WME, saying that Justin Baldoni takes responsibility for what happened, the bad energy on set. Do you remember that? So, okay, little break from the article. In this timeline of relevant events, on August 12th, 2024, was when William Morris, WME, was warned by Reynolds that he would personally draft a statement, and this is probably what happened to Taylor Swift also. I'm sure Ryan Reynolds said, I will personally draft a statement for Taylor, and he tells WME he would personally draft a statement for Wayfair to release immediately. And remember that Jamie Heath, aka the co-founder of Wayfair, the production company that he co-founded with Justin Baldoni, he was flabbergasted that Ryan and Lively were trying to blame Baldoni and Wayfair for their own self-inflicted PR nightmare, that he had consistently communicated that neither Wayfair nor Abel nor Baldoni had anything to do with the stories that were coming out, and they were organic and directly resulted from Lively's own tone-deaf marketing approach. But according to Lively, you guys, it's never them. It's never them. It's Taylor, it's Baldoni, it's Wayfair, it's us, it's this microphone. It's literally everyone else's fault but theirs. And this is the problem with an entitled narcissist with some white ass privilege. Anywho, Blake Lively contacted Swift's lawyers and demanded Miss Swift to release a statement of support for Lively and intimated that if Miss Swift refused to do so, private text messages and Lively's possessions would be released. Justin's lawyers are further informed and requested their text messages, which according to insiders may have contained details from over a decade's long friendship, relationships, and private confidences, according to Baldoni's lawyers and Swift's attorneys, reportedly addressed Lively's inappropriate and apparently extortionate threats in at least one written communication sent to her legal team. And those communications that the Wayfair party seek to obtain by way of subpoena, as they would provide evidence and attempt to intimidate and coerce a recipient witness in this litigation. The document says Swift's songs, My Tears Ricochet, was featured in the soundtrack of It Ends With Us, was pulled into the roller coaster saga this year when Baldoni filed a $400 million countersuit against Lively and her husband of defamation. Explosive text messages from Baldoni's complaint revealed Lively had referred to Taylor as my dragons, etc. Since then, Taylor Swift has tried to distance herself from the dramatic legal drama and her friendship. Those efforts have included icing Lively out of her inner circle. Travis Kelce has unfollowed Ryan Reynolds. And clearly, they have not been friends. I love this article. They are just going in. They also mentioned that Blake has been accused of failing to read the novel by Colleen Hoover. Okay, it goes on and on. Last week's speculation arose. Swift and Reynolds' friend, Hugh Jackman, was also possibly facing some grilling. Although Travis Kelce is unlikely to be slapped with a subpoena. One person who has already got this one is public Stephanie Jones, who is also being sued by Beldoni. Okay, and so on and so forth about that. This is so wild and illegal. I mean, Brian Feldman, Justin's attorney, is not an idiot, like in any way, shape, or form. He's not doing this unless he has receipts, proof, timeline, screenshots, fucking everything. So maybe he's friends with Taylor Swift's attorneys. Someone in Taylor Swift's camp gave him the knowledge to try to get Taylor out of it. They don't want Taylor Swift to take the stand. Maybe they're trying to get Taylor pulled out of the lawsuit. Maybe they're trying to get Blake to settle by Taylor Swift. But the attorneys gave Justin Baldoni's attorneys, Brian Feldman, some sort of knowledge that Blake Lively is extorting and blackmailing Taylor. This is insane. This is actually insane, you guys. This is so crazy. According to Brian Feldman, a letter got exposed where he emailed Judge Lyman, which I have right here, and I'm going to read real quick. We write in response to the letter filed by plaintiff and defendant Blake and Ryan Reynolds regarding the requested intervention in action to the Wayfair party subpoena. So basically, Blake and Ryan wanted to get them to stop subpoenaing Taylor Swift. All of a sudden, they were like, no. Please leave Taylor out of this. Please. So he continues. The Wayfair parties anticipate that the Venables motion to quash will be mooted in short order as their counsel and Venable are conferring in good faith. However, the Lively defendant insistence that the subpoena seats are irrelevant information is wrong, meaning it's not relevant. The subpoena aims to obtain discovery relating to witness tampering and evidence spoliation. Specifically, the Wayfair parties counsel are informed and believe based on information from a source is highly likely to have reliable information to someone that knows that Taylor Swift deleted their text messages. Michael Gottlieb, that's counsel for Blake, contacted one of Taylor Swift's attorneys who represents Taylor and demanded that Taylor release a statement of support for Miss Lively, intimating that if Miss Swift refused to do so, private text messages of a personal nature in Miss Lively's possession would be released. Y'all, I'm dying to know the dates. Aren't you dying to know the dates of when this was going down? Like, I want to know when Taylor Swift got this letter, when her attorney got this letter. I want to know actually when they sent the letter and said, you know what? You better write this fucking letter of support. Because I'm guessing that this happened like sometime in December before the sexual harassment stuff came out. So early on in December, because that's why Taylor Swift has had nothing to do with Blake. Sorry, I'll get back to the letter. Blake Lively's attorney contacted Taylor Swift's attorney and demanded release a statement of support for Blake Lively. She would release the text messages. The Wayfair parties counselor are further informed and believe that a representative of Taylor Swift addressed these inappropriate and apparently extortionate threats. Damn, Blake is really an extortionist. That is so gaggy, allegedly. Allegedly. I mean, she's done this multiple times now, and there's at least one written communication transmitted from her attorney to Taylor Swift's attorney. They literally wrote back to Blake Lively's attorney in writing saying that this was inappropriate. It is those communications at the Wayfair party seek to obtain by way of subpoena. So that's why they're subpoenaing Taylor's attorney as well, because they want to see the communications, the written back and forth saying, I do not want to give a letter of support to you and that you should not be releasing my text messages. Holy shit. Oh my God. As they would have evidence and attempt to intimidate and coerce a percipient witness in this litigation, as stated, the Wayfair Parties Council are in active discussion with Venable to determine how to proceed. Wayfair, Justin Baldoni's attorneys, and Taylor's attorneys, I think they're like in good standing, you guys. They're friendly. Those discussions prove unfruitful. The Wayfair parties will either oppose the motion to quash or withdraw the current subpoena in favor of an amended subpoena seeking only communications of question. Ooh. Oh, oh. Long and short of it, Blake is cooked. And if she's not cooked, she's fucking marinating in preparation to be cooked. Because let's be real, when you have the truth on your side, you don't have to resort to shit like this. You don't have to burn bridges and lie and cheat and steal to get your way if you have the truth on your side, period. Like, if there was actual sexual harassment, she wouldn't have to do all that. People would be in her corner riding for her. And if the fact that your best friend hasn't been seen with you in a year and a half, it's very telling. You do not need to threaten or intimidate your best friend to stand by you. Like, that's the godmother to three of your kids. Like, that's what you're going to do to your best friend? That's what you're going to do to your dragons? Do you not respect your dragons? But, I mean, she want to be Khaleesi so bad. Let's not forget, Khaleesi had to die because she descended into madness and she had a thirst and desire for absolute control. Jon Snow was in love with her, but he did what he had to do to end her reign, to prevent further destruction and suffering to people. Spoiler alert. But this shit, I mean, you guys, this is the shit that people write movies about. This is like a whole season of The Studio right here. This is someone who has no other avenue. She fucked with the wrong one. Because Taylor is not someone, I would not want to be on her bad side. I'll tell you that. Like, Taylor is taking Blake down. And that's not a small thing. Exposing Blake, her own best friend, because she's trying to throw her under the bus. She's trying to save her own ass. And Taylor's like, girl, you saw what happened to the last person who tried to do that to me. Don't try it. Godmother or not, it's not going to be me. You're not going to try to extort my ass. And now there's proof because Taylor Swift's lawyers have come back and said, I'm sorry, but that's extortion. I still remember the conversation when Ryan Reynolds sent that letter to WME. I know I talked about it. It's crazy because it's the same thing. They're literally playing the same playbook. I know Taylor is good friends with Sabrina Carpenter, obviously. And Sabrina has worked with Justin and they're cool. So maybe she's heard great things about Justin and maybe she met him and she was like, what is up with this whole situation? Why are you turning on this man? I don't understand why all of a sudden you hate him. Like, he seems like a good dude. Like, something weird is going on here. Like, is there a world at some point that Taylor knew? She said, I'm not going to ruin my career to get involved in something that I have no actual knowledge about. Like, something is off. A red herring. But, I mean, they were still friendly. You know, like, Blake did have her last birthday at Taylor's Rhode Island house. And they just never hung out in public. They did a couple little private appearances. But no one's really been fucking with Blake recently except her walking down the street with Selma Hayek hand in hand. And I feel like that Demi Lovato tweet, like, stay away from her. Leave her alone. Not Selma. No. Okay, one last thing in the Justin versus Blake drama. So Scarlett Johansson has a new movie coming out, her directorial debut. Eleanor the Great, and she happens to be working with Wayfair, aka Justin Baldoni's production company. Total random timing. And she even agrees to this. And she has a big spread. She's the cover of Vanity Fair this month. The interviewer throws out Justin's name, and she never actually worked with Justin, because when she was filming Eleanor the Great, he was filming It Ends With Us. So all she mentions is that it was backed by Wayfair Studios financially. But when the interviewer brought up Baldoni's name, all Johansson did was let out a loud, knowing laugh before praising his company. She said specifically that they were super supportive throughout the process. It's such weird timing, quote unquote. She said, referring to the ongoing legal battle with Justin and Lively, who is currently married to, obviously, Scarlett's first ex-husband, Ryan Reynolds. And as you guys know, she didn't have the best marriage to Ryan. Allegedly, according to the story, she thought he was quite a controlling guy. And so did Alanis Morissette. It's not a one-time thing. Ryan apparently is the very controlling husband. Let's talk about the husbands. I truly think this is more Ryan Reynolds. I don't know. I feel like he is so threatened by Justin. I don't know, you guys. I don't know. I have my, y'all know I love my theories, but I just don't see it. I really don't. I don't know. Maybe they're both assholes and they're both playing into it. But I also know, I peeped something the other day. Justin made his first Instagram post since It Ends With Us was like in theaters. He has not been online really at all since like the end of last year, really. He did a Mother's Day post for his mom and his wife, and he has not had to turn his comments off at all. He has not had to turn his comments off at all. People are writing for him. People are in his corner. Meanwhile, Blake and Ryan, comments off. I don't know, you guys. It's getting sticky. So I'll keep y'all updated on that, too, because this might be another high. I mean, it's already a high profile case, but when they're in the courtroom and the trial starts and the jury is selected, if it gets to that point, ooh, girl, it's going to be messy. So Taylor's getting subpoenaed, and now Kim K is headed to Paris, and not for couture, but to face the guys who robbed her. So let's talk about a full circle moment. Kim K was over in Paris to testify against the people that burglarized her all those years ago. And she showed up in Paris, and I'm sure the reality show cameras were in tow, but I did love that she wore $8 million in jewelry. And for those who don't know, she was traumatized after that robbery. I mean, they literally stalked her. I mean, Kim's robbery kind of changed the game for how celebrities go about posting stuff. You know, like, she used to be very much like, I'm at this restaurant right now, come say hi. You know, like, she was very open with where she was at what time, all of that. But she had security, so she didn't think too much into it. And then when this robbery happened, these guys said that they were tracking her. They knew what hotel she was going to be at. They knew when her security was going on break. Like, they tied them up too. So after that happened, she was so traumatized. And at this point, she had kids too, you know, and she didn't wear jewelry like that for a long time. Like, she would literally wear jewelry on a red carpet or for a photo shoot, and that was it. Like, in her day-to-day stuff, she was not wearing any kind of jewelry because she was so scared that it was going to happen again, you know, like even going on trips, like if you watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians, it was really traumatizing for her. So I was like, you go, girl, you wear, you be decked out, studded in your diamonds to, you know, get some of her power back. And yeah, she took the trial, the stand at the trial, and Chris looking like, I don't even know, like a, she is giving Diane Keaton realness with her suits, you know? I'm like, okay, Chris, I'm, you do it, girl. Annie Hall, Lottie freaking Dar, realness. But while we're on the subject of Kim, we got to talk about the Ryan Murphy series, All's Fair, and that trailer that dropped. And it is completely ridiculous. And it doesn't mean I don't like it. It's just, it's so over the top, very campy. It's very Ryan Murphy, very Kim Kardashian. And honestly, it kind of gagged me that she had top bill when it's such an all-star cast. I mean, they got Sarah Paulson, they got Teyana Taylor, they got freaking Naomi Watts, they got Glenn fucking Close, for the love of God. So it's just so interesting to see Kim be an HBIC on a full scripted series. We'll see. She's the top of the call sheet. That's kind of crazy. And I'm excited to see what movement her face makes throughout the series with all that Botox. And she'd be like, I don't do that. I'm not really into that. But I know that's just like, she can't wink because of all the Botox, but she's winking at us, you know? So there's a lot of things happening in culture. But before I get into my dishes, one thing I want to talk about just briefly is the HBO, I don't even know what, snafu, debacle, announcement. Just, oh my God, what a time. So Max made the announcement that it's going to go back to HBO Max, which is like, yeah, the most stupid. I mean, it's giving New Coke, right? Like, it's giving Crystal Pepsi, which is before my time, but I know the lore, okay? And I think I've complained about this so much, and I've never called it Max. And when people, like, say Max, my, like, ears ring a little bit. They bleed a little bit. Anybody else? Just me? Okay. But I just always was like, it's the most ridiculous thing. And I almost felt like it was shunning the HBO legacy, which I think is a phenomenal legacy. And they said, well, we just think it's out of touch for people and it's too classy, so we're going to call it Max and make it for everyone. And I just thought, that's the dumbest fucking shit. Like, I just am like, the math doesn't math for that. And David Zaslav, the corporate leader behind the entire conglomerate that owns Max or HBO Max, like, you need to talk to the people, girl, truly. Because, I mean, HBO is such a phenomenal legacy because it's been around for so long and it literally changed the game of cable TV. I mean, HBO started in like 1979, 1980, I think, that ballpark. And then 2008, they started HBO Go. Do you remember that? Any of my OG HBO people? And then in 2015, they had HBO Now. And then in 2020, they did HBO Max. And then in 2023, they decided, let's get rid of the HBO entirely and just call it Max. Now they finally weaned up and they're going to go back to HBO Max. And I just think that's what, after the stories I've been reading today and all these trials and shit, so much has been going so wrong lately that this is a step in the right direction. And I was super excited to see the news that my inner dialogue was being recognized. And I mean, HBO has incredible brand recognition. It's off the charts. So I don't know if you're into nerdy stuff like this, like me, if your brain works like mine, there's a great book about the history of HBO that I read a couple years ago. It is called Tinderbox by James Andrew Miller. And James Andrew Miller is a wonderful writer, and he's done other books of the sort with all different kinds of oral histories of certain topics. He did a great one about Saturday Night Live. He did one about ESPN, and he's just done so many books throughout his career. It's a very long book. It's thick, but I just found it so mesmerizing because the history of HBO is really interesting. It really ushered in its new home box office where you were able to, this and VCRs, you were able to see first run movies in your home. And then they broke into the original programming. And if you think about it, I mean, hello, Sex and the City, My 6 Feet Under Girlies, Where You At? I don't know if you remember the Larry Sanders Show. Like, I have always been, HBO's always been my girl. Like, I will cut Netflix. I'll lose that subscription some months if it's something that I'm not really checking for. I can go without Netflix. Same with like a Hulu. Like, I can go without. But Peacock and HBO, till the wheels fall off. 10 toes down, okay? I'm here for them. Those are like, I don't care. I don't care. I just remember like my childhood. I have a very weird selective memory, so I can remember all this stuff. And they just kind of ushered in this new age of television with The Sopranos and, of course, Game of Thrones and The Wire. I mean, there are just so many incredible HBO shows. So I was just super excited about it. And I'm curious if there are going to be any other changes. And even with Bravo, remember like the NBC Universal owning Bravo, then they split off because it was like the Comcast merger, and then the Versant has split and they're trying to take stations like E, but Bravo is remaining with NBC Universal Comcast because they really believe in the Bravo brand. I don't know. It's a wild transition period, but I'm waiting to see if HBO Max, as we're calling it, if they're going to get rid of like their Discovery content, because, you know, you can find Sister Wives, Dr. Pimple Popper, 90 Day Fiance, shows like that. So I'm curious to see if they're going to still be under the HBO Max umbrella, because I'm a girl that can go between watching trash, and I don't consider Bravo trash by any means, or even 90 Day Fiance trash. But I'm aware that I'm watching on HBO, there are some highbrow things and there are some lowbrow things, and they're all on the Max home screen. So now I'm kind of wondering if it's just going to be premium highbrow content, or, I mean, remember Discovery had their own streaming service for a minute. I remember trying to watch Shark Week and I had to go through fucking Chutes and Ladders when they weren't on HBO. So I was like, fuck, it's Shark Week. I'm just trying to do my research. Like, that's my happy place in the summer. Besides Love Island, I love Shark Week. I look forward to it. It's very scary because we're all just, you know, these streaming services, they don't know what they're doing. And we're all just like, paying you our money just to give us our shows. Like, I just want to watch. I don't care about the politics. Just give me my shows. I don't care. I want them to all be in one place, please. And all these fucking streaming services, I just want to watch. Okay, so anyways, that's some good news I wanted to share with you guys. Now I'm going to get into my meal. Okay, so my appetizer is a bit new. It's a new appetizer. I'm switching up my palette. I'm working late. So my appetizer is Eurovision. Any Eurovision girlies in the house, pull up a seat, babe. If you don't know, Eurovision, it's an annual international song competition organized by the European Broadcasting Union, and it was established in 1956, and it features artists in participating countries performing original songs live on TV, and the winners are determined by the national jury and public votes. You could call in. It could cost like 99 cents per call, so I'm not doing that. I'll pay 10 cents per page for a legal document, but 99 cents to vote for Eurovision? No, thank you. But it is so cool. I don't know. I think it's really fun. It's not just like one musical style. It's very, very elaborate. You know, it's truly like American Idol on shrooms with like Drag Race lighting. It is so I don't know. I just am having such a fun time with it. And it's launched the careers of ABBA, okay? And a world treasure, Miss Celine Dion. Celine Dion started from Eurovision. And when I found that out, and also it's streaming on Peacock. So that's a big reason why I was like, let me just see. Let me just see what it's about. And then I just got locked in. Because I was like, I don't know what the fuck they are singing, but it's a vibe in the staging, the lighting. It was truly like a Beyonce, Taylor Swift show. It was really putting their whole pussies into it. And I was truly infatuated. I couldn't take my eyes off. I was like, oh, okay, well, I've watched both the semifinals. So, yeah, the grand finale is on the 17th. And the slogan this year is United by Music. And I really believe that's true. It really is a universal love language and a language that we all speak. Yeah, it's a magical experience. And I can see why people get excited about it every year. I mean, it is so cool. And it's all these countries competing for best song. And I had a good time. Sweden had Bara Bara Batsu. And that's become like the most streamed song in the competition thus far. And it was a bop. It's taking place in Basel, Switzerland. I have a friend who actually lives there, which is so crazy. Shout out to Gina. That's crazy, girl. I wonder if she had Eurovision. I should check in and say, bitch, you there? I know she's not there. She hates crowds. But yeah, Eurovision is a new appetizer and it's really fun. And like I said, it's on Peacock. And yeah, if you need just like a little serotonin boost and just some good vibes, it's all kinds of music, cool, different cultures around the world, different countries. And it's a cute little slime. It's a cute little slime. My main course. My main course is a book. It's a book. Because reading is what's fundamental. And if you haven't read The Dish with Tish's Substack, then you're only getting half the story. I mean, I only have my initial post, but I'm going to be locking in that bitch. So y'all better subscribe and pledge your support, honeys. Okay? Don't you want to be able to say, wow, I've been there from the jump. Like, I remember seeing it when it was like a few, and now she's got millions. Wow. And I'm a loyal bitch, so I'll remember who's been writing for me. Okay. So my main course is Tina Knowles, aka Beyonce's mama, has a new book called Matriarch, and it is so good. Oh my gosh. I am just so blown away by that woman. And it does not surprise me in the slightest that Beyonce has turned into the woman that she is because she had Tina as a mother. And she says that all the time. But just hearing her story, she feels very deeply. And I get it. I think she's the HSP just like me. And I was so riveted. I felt like she was talking to me, you know, like I felt like this was just her telling me her story. And I was con- truly just enamored by it. And she's just lived such a big, rich and full life. I have been totally swept away by the book. And it's really only a quarter through the book that Beyoncé is even mentioned. She's in the intro, but that's because, I mean, like I said, Tina has had such a big, full life. And, you know, she talks about her romances, you know, her marriage to Matthew Knowles, Beyoncé's father, who was a known philanderer. He cheated on her multiple times, and they would break up and get back together and break up and get back together, which also I'm kind of like, it makes sense why Beyoncé is such a loyal gal, because she's seen that from her mama. And sometimes you stay until you can't stay no more. And that's what Tina did too. Until enough is enough. She also talked about her second marriage to the acting teacher and even the pre-Destiny's Child stuff and how they struggled to get a record deal and really had to fight and claw their way to get a seat at the table. And they were babies. I mean, Beyoncé and Kelly, they were like 16, 17 years old when they really were trying to make it work and be seen by these labels. And on top of that, Tina was running a hair salon. She owned a hair salon as well. And if you just think about where they are today, I mean, it's Cowboy Carter week in Chicago. Beyoncé has got a full weekend of shows. And they just announced that her 5-night stay in Los Angeles was sold out. And it turns out it grossed $55 million over 5 nights. The biggest gross for 5 nights in a row for any concert ever. Ever. And that takes blood, sweat, and tears to do. And having a mama like Tina, it's just been so cool to see. I love and appreciate and obviously adore Beyoncé so much, and to see her roots and where she gets her work ethic from and her dedication. It just makes sense that she turned out to be the woman that she is. And she talked about Beyoncé's 40th birthday and how Jay-Z flew them all to Italy and they had a private island. And she talked about the media and how they were saying Blue Ivy was somebody else's kid. And Beyoncé said, "Mom, I get it. I know it's offensive, but, and it's hurtful, but, you know, you can't comment on that. We got to rise above." And I do think that that's got to be the wildest position to be in, because so many people want to know everything about you at all times. You truly become like an alien in the testing tube. And I realized, you know, how much we get it wrong. And of course, it's so much more fun to come up with our theories and believe the craziest story than it is sometimes to believe the truth. And I'm not saying that these things are completely crazy. Like, some of these stories aren't completely salacious and insane. I mean, we just talked about Diddy, but I'm just saying that sometimes I just feel like if we do get it wrong, it's rare for us to course correct and say, "Oh man, like, if we were wrong about this, what else are we wrong about?" You know, like, look at Britney Spears. Like, it took so much time for us to course correct that narrative. And, you know, just, you're in a bubble. You can't do anything. And yeah, just seeing her POV, it's really good. I hear her audiobook is amazing. I might even do that after I read it. It's 17 hours long, but a friend of mine was telling me, like, it sounds like she is talking to you. It flies by. So I might dig into that. And now my dessert. This is tough. Next week, it's going to be in the equation. I know Secret Lives of Mormon Wives just came out, but I'm only like, I'm still early days. I still have a lot to do. So that'll be on the docket for next week. So my dessert for this week, it's going to be The Valley. Oh my God. I was so clenched, you guys. I really was so pressed watching this episode. The Michelle and Jesse of it all, their relationship is just so toxic and really just fucked. It bumps me out to the nth degree, honestly. And then the Danny and Nia of it all. I just think they got three kids under three, now four. I don't know. If he wants to have a fucking drink, let him have a drink. I mean, the only person I understand feeling some kind of way is Jasmine and her girlfriend, because obviously, like, he was inappropriate to them. That's not cool. But I hate that everyone waited till after Nia got up from the table to start talking about her and Danny. I'm like, why didn't y'all say that when she was there? Why are you waiting until she exits to say your opinion on it? I didn't like that. I didn't care for that. And I just think that they're trying to make a mountain out of a molehill with Nia and Danny, because they're all kind of going through stuff. And I can understand Brittany being like, I'm sharing so much and you're not sharing anything. But it's also like, we are sharing a lot. Nia has been so open about her postpartum, where they want to live next, her pregnancy journey and fertility journey. Like, they don't really have that much tea to spill. So I'm like, what the fuck do y'all want from them? So that is my dessert. What a diverse little meal, hitting all the spots. And oh, I'm stuffed. We ate good today, y'all. Between the subpoenas, testimonies, and the trials, this episode has basically been a legal buffet. So court is adjourned, but the dish is still piping. So thank you guys so much for listening to another episode. Make sure you like, subscribe, go on that Substack for more hot takes. And I will catch you guys next time on The Dish with Tish, where we always serve it hot. No objections. Bye-bye.